From the Lend to Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of March, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. We'll take something of a deep dive into politics related to the Farm Bill and what's happening in Washington, D.C. as it relates to budgets and tax cuts. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather too. That with Mike Tenor. T-Storm weather here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $4.69, up 7 cents a bushel. July at $4.75.5, up 6 and a quarter. And the December new crop at $4.53, a penny and a half higher. Soybeans, $10.13 on the lead May, up 4 and 3 quarters. July, $10.25 at a quarter, 3 and 3 quarters higher. In November, new crop up a quarter cents. Settlement price there at $10.10 and a quarter cents. Bean meal futures at $2.97.10. Down 60, the bean oil, $42.71, 35 higher, both of those in the May contract, and wheat futures for the July. Soft red down 6.5 cents today at $5.73.5. The hard red July, harvest month at $6.01, down 7.75 cents. Live cattle futures at $2.05.25, $2.17.5 lower. Feeder cattle at $289.10. $1.60 higher, and lean hogs were at $96.25, down 25 cents. The live cattle were higher, not lower, by the way. Crude oil at $68 a barrel, $1.13 higher. Diesel fuel at $2.20, up 2 cents. And the wholesale price of gasoline today, 2.1 cents higher, to settle at $2.19.3. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 135 points. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in the marketplace for the day and the week. Hello, Matt. Thanks for being with us. What took place in the overnight and day trade today?
Yeah, so, you know, you look at the overnight market, and it wasn't anything too exciting. It's been this way. It's been pretty quiet here. Volume's been down. Day session, though, gave a little bit of life to corn, especially on the front month. Had some bull spreading going on, and no doubt there's probably some business that we've seen. I mean, exports were good again. I believe we're around 50 million ton versus 10 million needed to reach USDA goal. So, I mean, we're just boiling right along, or 50,000 ton, I guess. Versus 10,000. But regardless, we're boiling right along. These exports are going to have to get some sort of adjustment at some point if this continues, because we've really been exporting a lot of corn here.
Are we hearing out of Brazil that they're worried yet about dry conditions for Safrina corn? I know some of the meteorologists are beginning to say that.
Yeah, there's no doubt that there's issues down there. Now, some of the forecasts have been trying to bring some rain in for them, but, you know, at the same time, you're going to have to bring in a broad-based rain to kind of switch the trend, if you will. You know, and there's a lot of concern that they won't get moist enough before this dry season starts here. I think they say the next, you know, 35 to 40 days are paramount. So no doubt this dry trend that they're currently in is very concerning.
There were some numbers out earlier in the week related to acreage, both the Allendale figures and those from the old Informa group, now S&P Global, if I remember correctly. What did you think of those, and what are you at agmarket.net using?
You know, as far as what we're using, I mean, I usually don't look too closely at everyone else's. I wait until the average comes out. You can kind of see where everyone's at. We're at 95.39 for corn acres and 82.75 for beans. Between Ag Market and GSA, we surveyed all of the people that work with us, you know, who in turn talked to their growers and surveyed their growers. You know, it's just pretty overwhelming that there's going to be a lot more corn this year. You know, last week, talked to a lot of folks, even in central Illinois, that said that their corn-on-corn run, as far as anhydrous was concerned, was very impressive. So
We're looking for pretty big corn acres. 95.39 sounds like a big number, but Todd, I wouldn't be surprised one bit if it's not above our number, maybe even a fair amount above it.
And again, what was the soybean figure?
82.75.
So that number is really pretty low. What does that do to the marketplace?
Well, there's no doubt that the U.S. balance sheet will tighten. We know that that would be the case if our number came to pass. When you start looking at, for instance, what the balance sheet would look like domestically, you could get some awfully tight numbers. Now, we feel like the USDA may have to make an adjustment or two when it comes to crush. No doubt that soybean exports are kind of called into question. We don't know if all of our sales will end up getting shipped or not. But at the same time, if you end up with a 380 this year, and then you plug in an 82.75 for acreage, then you could start talking about a major need for domestic rationing. So we do know that we can take some beans on an import basis. I know people don't want to hear that. It's happened before. I think it could happen again. And so we have to keep a close eye on that. But you're going to have a divergence between world and domestic once again, it appears. And so it'll just kind of be interesting to see how this plays out. But we don't expect huge bean acres. When you're looking at November beans as the market closed here, 10-10, Todd, that just doesn't work for most guys, especially if they can't raise high-yielding beans. So very few people in the entire U.S. can get a cash bid for fall that's $10 or above. I think you'd have to get into the Delta to see those. So it's pretty tough sailing right now.
On the flip side, a corn number above 95 million acres would be big and put pressure on the marketplace. How does that play into the market across corn, beans, and wheat?
Yeah, whenever you look at corn and wheat, for instance, no question that world stocks continue to dwindle. Both of those, you've seen that happen. And so you've got to think that that's part of the reason the funds there for a while were wanting to be fairly long corn. How would a big acreage number play into corn and beans? You've got to think that this ratio from beans to corn, which, is still running at multi-year level lows, that would flip-flop pretty substantially. And that doesn't mean necessarily that beans are going up. That could mean that corn goes down and beans stay the same, but we feel like that relationship's going to change quite a bit once you get the acreage numbers verified. We've got to think that they're trading them to an extent already, but at the same time, Todd, it's going to be a bit of a shock to the system, I think, to actually see those numbers printed. So, and especially if you get something above, for instance, the trade average or maybe even something above the trade range, I think those are all possibilities.
Are you satisfied it's standing aside the marketplace and waiting for those acreage figures to come out before you do something else?
I don't really want to do anything as far as making sales right now, especially for the vast majority of growers that tell us they can't really make these prices work. So, if that's the case, I'd kind of wait just for the time being and see how these acres numbers impact the market. If we're going to start talking about weather after acreage, there's no doubt that there's definitely plenty to talk about. We've got some issues throughout the Corn Belt as far as dryness is concerned. We finally got some rain in our part of the world, but at the same time, there's very few tiles running anywhere, and I think it's something we're going to have to keep a very close eye on.
You are far enough south in Illinois that your open date starts tomorrow for soybean planting. You were talking about that last week with us. Did you get rain that'll hold you out of the field?
Yeah, we don't have enough. We're not able to get rolling at that first date on the 21st. But I do think that any areas that didn't receive rain, you're going to start seeing some bean planters roll especially. I don't know that corn, people will be putting corn in the ground just yet. There'll probably be some areas, but at the same time, it sure seems like most people have been wanting to focus on soybeans first and then taking on corn later here over the last few years, and I don't expect this year will be any different.
Thank you much, Matt.
Oh, absolutely.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with USDA, where it has announced up to $100 million in funding for research into various methods of preventing highly pathogenic avian influenza into poultry flocks. Rod Bain has more with the Secretary of Agriculture.
The latest on USDA's five-pronged plan to combat highly pathogenic avian influenza in poultry flocks and, in turn, reduce high egg prices.
This morning, we announced that up to $100 million will be available for a funding opportunity to support projects on avian influenza prevention, therapeutics, vaccines, and research.
Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins with the announcement in a call with reporters Thursday. She notes the emergency funding is available through a competitive process, with projects focused in areas from novel therapeutics and vaccines to risk pathways research. Applications are due May 19th. In addition,
USDA is offering a webinar to assist interested applicants in learning more about the funding opportunity and how to submit a proposal on Tuesday, April 1st at 12 p.m. Eastern.
Details are available online at www.aphis.usda.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
From poultry, we turn to pipelines. Iowa landowners who oppose the carbon pipeline project from Summit Carbon Solutions rallied this week in Des Moines. Their renewed energy comes after South Dakota Governor Larry Roden signed a law blocking the company from using eminent domain to build its carbon capture pipelines in his state. Since the South Dakota governor signed the law, Summit has asked the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission to suspend its pipeline permit application. Well, the Iowa landowners demanded lawmakers in Des Moines approve a similar bill that would eliminate eminent domain. Summit Carbon Solutions intends to build a carbon sequestration pipeline extending 2,500 miles across South Dakota, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and North Dakota to connect over 50 ethanol plants. Now, we'll stay with the agricultural news, but we'll focus on the Farm Bill. 13th District Representative Nikki Budzinski was in Urbana yesterday for a farmer roundtable. She's a Democrat and a member of the House Committee on Agriculture. The Congresswoman is concerned the Republican budget working through Capitol Hill, different than the just passed continuing resolution, may make it harder to pass a farm bill in the future. This is because the GOP funding bill includes a $230 billion cut to SNAP benefits over a 10-year period.
And so what I'm saying is that if they're actually able to do that in this next budget, it is going to hurt our chances of getting a bipartisan farm bill negotiated.
But Zinsky says if the GOP plan to cut SNAP is enacted, it will make it harder for her urban and even some rural colleagues to vote for a farm bill, which would be more fully dedicated to farmers. Historically, the Farm Bill has been both bipartisan and supported because of the food and feeding programs across rural and urban districts. Budzinski did share some Farm Bill-related thoughts now circulating in D.C.
I have not heard that anything will be done to crop insurance, that in the budget negotiations, I have not heard of any cuts. I think that what there's been more discussion of in the House Agriculture Committee is actually trying to plus up, and help reference prices. But again, it's a pay for. Who's going to pay for that? And right now, when you're talking about taking dollars potentially out of SNAP, it doesn't leave a lot of ability to say we're going to find other money for reference prices and adjusting crop insurance.
13th District Representative Nikki Budzinski was in Urbana yesterday, along with Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and the State Director of Agriculture, Jerry Costello. Let's stay with the Farm Bill, where again it faces tough odds this year, given all Congress must do on other issues like taxes and raising the debt ceiling. And that means the possibility of a Farm Bill Plan B, the way former USDA Deputy Secretary Chuck Connors sees it, and the landscape in D.C.
Just given how few bills are going to pass, you have to believe there's a chance that the Farm Bill and, other priorities might be a part of that reconciliation process.
A $4.5 trillion with a T dollar monster bill to include an extension to the president's 2017 tax cuts, budget cuts, and an increase in the debt limit, as you've already heard. O'Connor told AgriPulse's Ag and Food Policy Summit there's precedent for using a reconciliation package that cannot be filibustered to pass a Farm Bill.
Some of our difficult Farm Bills in the past have been done as a result of reconciliation. And so this is obviously in that category of very difficult farm bills.
Especially because, again, of the Democratic pushback against SNAP and other cuts reaching a boiling point. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says a farm bill might not be a good fit with budget reconciliation.
You kind of like to keep everything balanced in a farm bill, and this would take one of the important things out of it.
Like funding an increase in reference prices via reconciliation, where it might not be as robust. Connor also says a lot could be missing by skirting regular order.
We've got the basis for a very, you know, some very good farm legislation here. Our differences aren't as vast as they have been historically, in my humble opinion, and so I would like to see regular order proceed there.
Given Congress's inability to get things done, Connor says short-circuiting the farm bill process is an option. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand. Anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org, willag.org, or in your favorite podcast applications, just look up the Closing Market Report. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Let's check in now with the CEO and president of T-Storm Weather, tstorm.net online, Mike Tenor, to take a look at the global growing regions. Hello, Mike. Thanks for being with us again.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Let's start in South America. Safrinha, or second crop corn, is in the ground and growing. Weather conditions are always important. Can you give me some background on how that crop is doing at this point?
Well, it's pretty dry. If you look at rainfall since February 15th, the key region of Goiás and Mato Grosso, which accounts for about 60% of that corn crop, that's been the driest since 1983 over that period of time. If you look at Paraná, which accounts for another 15 to 20% of the crop, they've been the driest since 2005. And both of those regions were the second driest in our 45-year history of data. So this is a dry setup going into the key part of the season. The key part of the season essentially starts next week and then lasts through the first week of May. Over that period of time, rainfall normally diminishes as we move later into April and May because their climate just turns a lot drier. They have a quasi-monsoon type of setup where they receive a lot of rain in the beginning of the year in January and February, and then it tapers off over the course of March and April and May. And by the time you get into June, it's completely dry with no rain for 3 months. So that transition is going to be starting here going forward, and we're going to need to see a lot of rain, Todd.
Well, what's the weather forecast like?
Well, it doesn't look all that great. There will be thunderstorms in the central and northern regions as we move into April, so it's not going to be completely dry. They still should be seeing around 3 inches of rain over the next 2 weeks. And from what we can see, it looks like they're going to receive about 1.5 to 3.5 inches. So most areas will still be drier than normal as we move into April. And if that's the case, then we're going to need to see a lot of rain right after that because it's so dry leading into this key part of the season. In southern areas, the story is a little bit drier. There will be some nice storms there around Monday, but other than that, it doesn't look all that wet. We think an area of surface level high pressure will dominate southern Brazil, and that will keep some pretty big rains that take place in Argentina and even into parts of Paraguay to their west, pretty much outside of the key growing belt, although they will receive some rain. So we're thinking it'll be drier than normal there as well. And again, this is just going to put a real lot of pressure on the rainfall forecast from around April 1st to 15th.
Turning your attention to North America now, let's visit Kansas, the hard red winter wheat growing regions of the Great Plains states. Can you tell me what the conditions are like? I know they've had some really cold blizzard kinds of weather, but they've also been really dry.
Well, they have been. If you look at rainfall over the past 90 days, around half of that crop was drier than normal over that period. And the only 2 years that compared to it going back 10 years would be 2018 and 2022. So this is one of the drier setups that they've had leading into their key part of the season. Now, there was some rain and some snow over the last 36 hours, and that did improve conditions a little bit in western Kansas. But for the overall big picture, it hasn't changed too dramatically because most of the rain and the snow that we saw fell to the north of the driest area. And the dry area, keep in mind, is across southern Kansas and all of Oklahoma and Texas. One thing we need to keep in mind, though, that's going to make this growing season a little tricky and that we'll never really know until we start harvesting is that we've dealt with two pretty big windstorms since we last talked. Last Friday, there were wind gusts of 60 to 80 miles an hour across a widespread area of Oklahoma and Texas, and that was then followed by winds of 50 to 70 miles an hour Tuesday and Tuesday night, across, and even yesterday, across a big chunk of that same area, plus Colorado, Kansas, and even into Nebraska. So we'll see if that turns into some type of factor that damages a crop. But overall, they're not really doing all that great for this time of the year. And it's going to be dry there for the next 7 to 10 days. And then rain chances look a little bit better once we get toward April 1st. But we're going to need to see some nice rains to get out of this situation, Todd.
Let's put this into perspective, if you could, as it's related to soil erosion. Those really strong winds carried soils from Texas, Oklahoma, I suppose parts of Kansas, right here into East Central Illinois. What do we know about that?
Well, it was pretty amazing to see. I was up myself on Saturday morning and looked out the window, and I saw something I never thought I'd see in my life, which was this reddish-brown hue that was covering the sky. And I knew immediately that this was the dust from out in the plains, because I'd never seen anything like that. And normally the sky would be blue when it's hazy, not this brown color. And it's kind of amazing to think about, Todd, because, you know, we've all heard of this just from knowing the history of the Dust Bowl and what happened back in the 1930s. And there's certainly plenty of accounts of all that dust in the plains reaching through the Midwest and even all the way across the East Coast into Washington, D.C., which is when politicians at that time started to realize that this really was a big deal, because this should not be happening. That just tells you not only how dry it's been out there, but how significant those winds were. And those winds were really strong. We're talking official gusts of 80 miles an hour or more. And from non-thunderstorms, keep in mind, this is just winds blowing west to east. So, yeah, very unusual.
Straight line winds. Turn your attention to Ukraine, Russia, and the wheat crop there.
Well, all these areas are also pretty dry. I know we keep talking about dry, dry, and dry, but that's just the way it is right now. Over the last 90 days, Europe, Russia, and Ukraine, when you look at their wheat crops, they all were the driest in March at this time of the year, going into the key part of the season, over at least the last 6 years. And it's just another indication that they need rain. And some areas like Ukraine are really getting pretty off the charts here with the amount of dryness that they have. Now, for them, the key part of the season is still a little further into the future. They don't start turning sensitive immediately like we will here in the U.S. over the next month. For them, it'll be maybe 2 to 3 months and even into parts of June. So there is time for things to change. But in that area, you know, if we don't see a pretty nice weather pattern develop, it's going to be a big problem for them. Now, they do have a little bit of better news in some of these other areas that we've talked about, because there are a couple of significant systems that will pass across Europe. We think some of those are going to bring some nice rains into at least the southern third of wheat across Europe, and maybe some of that will extend into Ukraine. But overall, it doesn't look super wet, even though there was some rain over the last few days in some of these areas. So this is another thing to keep in mind, but that one we don't have to think about so hard today. We will need to think about that one a little bit more, though, in April.
Thank you much, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather. That's tstormweather.net online. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.